right, kiddies, welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations about random topics. This episode is entitled This Is Your Brain on Cars. It is about the unique state of mind and mental landscape that comes with driving. For instance, Jean Baudrillard in America, he said that, you know, driving is a form of amnesia. Or Douglas Copeland in Life After God, he probably read, actually, America. He says...
I read some of him.
Yes, he's a good guy. Canadian, very likes Kraft macaroni and cheese. he said that, you know, driving is the one time in your life when you're allowed not to think about your problems. And just that forever refreshing landscape is... just a new mental state of mind, and you just don't have to worry. You're driving. You don't have to deal with your problems because you're driving, and you're driving a 3-ton death machine, and you better not get too wound up, you know. So our guest this episode, I guess, is Mr. Spiff Wiegand, who Hello. Knows quite a bit about being behind the wheel. He
yes.
is a traveling musician, I guess we could say. What could you say for yourself?
Sure, I'm a traveling musician. I'd say that about covers it.
That's about covers it. So,
yeah, a musician that travels from one place to the next and plays music and then travels to another place.
Okay. Yeah. So what made you make the decision that you no longer wanted to be a productive member of society? I mean, because at some point, you're like, I have a job, I'm paying taxes, I'm doing things. And you're just like, no, I just, you know, I want to be the Rush Limbaugh nightmare.
Right.
Human being. Like, what is that
you know,
like?
What's
that? I mean, do you have some sort of mental collapse? I mean, was it a bad breakup? I mean, mommy issues? What's going on with that?
All of the above. No, I would say I made a conscious decision to get on the road.
Okay.
That is something I definitely made a choice about. However, I was, if I'm not on the road, I'm actually worse.
Oh, really?
I'm actually really the non-productive state of society. Like, I lay around, I don't do very much, I kind of wander around my room. I live in New York, but I don't take advantage of the city.
Mm.
If I have a free day, I do. If I'm lucky, I will have convinced myself to write a song. I'll like actually cook myself some food instead of eating some crap I found in the street. And then at a shop in the street. And then I'll in the meantime, the entire like rest of the day of those stuff, I will wander in a circle around my room, and I will just play instruments. That's because because I'm obsessed with music. So I wander and I go pick up my banjo and I play that for 5 minutes, and then I go, oh, there's that thing on. Anyway, you understand where this is going.
It's I understand that. I've said when I'm not teaching, I have that problem. The summer is very rough for me. I get angry. Actually, when I'm not working, I'm like, you know, and it's just like I get fixated and it's just awful. And so you just hope school never ends or whatever. Mm-hmm. So how many days of the year are you on the road now? I mean, that's.
It's been kind of new. I've had the car for a year and a half.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what the typical year is yet, but but. I think where it's going to come down to is that I will essentially spend the warmer months traveling.
Mm.
That the cold months are when you need to not try to live in your car.
Yes.
And then the warmer months are when if you don't have a gig for a week, but you're in the middle of New Mexico, it's not a big deal if you camp.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of, it seems to be where it's going. So what I'm looking at now is touring in April, May, June, and July and August and maybe into September. But then the next 6 months of, you know, October through March, is that 6 months?
Something so like that. That's a
those
number.
Would be pretty much
March is the third month, and then there's so that's six. We do math here.
We do math. that's I think where it's gonna come, what it's gonna come down to. The weather, That's one thing I've noticed about driving, since we are talking about cars. Mm-hmm. The weather is important.
The weather is vital, yeah.
It's really freaking important. And it's not, because, you know, like we were talking about snowstorms earlier, mm-hmm. and then the snowstorm will knock your, will stop.
Yes, it will destroy you.
It will also not let you camp.
Yes, that's right.
And if you're, well, if you're mean, making there nothing, is, you don't stay in hotels.
There is a form of camping. It's called being stranded. It's like, you know, there's like that fine line. Again, there's camping, you know, I guess camping is by choice. Mm-hmm. Stranded is also living it's out of your car, yeah. but,
it's
you know,
it's
you might die. Camping. I guess you could die camping, too, but you're just sort of like, I didn't choose this. I'm going to die. This is very scary.
You know what? I don't have my sleeping bag in my car. I don't know why I didn't grab that thing and put it in my car. I meant to. I have a whole thing that I always. Yeah, I mean, I could.
You're gonna die.
Something could happen.
No, that's always the thing. I had a bad experience traveling for Christmas a couple years ago, and I thought about, you know, I finally had to realize, think to myself, I have a full tank of gas. Mm-hmm. I am in this thing that can create electricity and heat. And so I can do that for many hours, and I'm in a state that's populated in modern civilization.
Yeah.
And there's probably water nearby. Yeah. What am I freaking out about?
I hear you. It's not that bad.
I got cell phone service, but it is.
So you're not going to wreck or something, you're okay.
Well, yeah, and you know, and I think that's the thing. One of the things I noticed, because my parents made the awful decision to move to a gated golf community down south.
What's awful about that?
It's just horrifying in so many ways. I mean, it is, as much as I love cars, it is suburban car culture hell.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, her community that my mom lives in now, well, still, when my father passed away, you have to be in a motor vehicle to get in and out of the community. You cannot enter on foot, on a bicycle, or motorcycle. You have to be in a passenger vehicle to get past security. And so it's this thing, you
know.
That's wrong. And yeah, and you drive for 40 minutes and then you can buy groceries, so you're in a metro area. Huh. It's just because everybody has to drive there. And so it's very bizarre, but one of the things I noticed the first time I went down there is how snowphobic everyone was. I mean, a lot of them were Northeast transplants or snowbirds or whatever, you know, people from Connecticut. And it's always, you know, is there snow down there? There's never snow here, is it? And it's just, and it is that. And it's just, you think that dependency or that sense of freedom that you get, or people seem to get from the automobile, mm-hmm. that snow is the great threat to that.
You're right.
It's
almost,
it's not just, oh, well, it's snowing and that kind of sucks and I probably shouldn't go out, but it's almost, takes on this like almost mm-hmm. metaphysical bent.
Yeah.
Which is horrifying in a way.
I definitely think, it's not for everyone, but I would say that, and this is off topic, but the non-car situation where living in New York and other cities that have great public transportation, like, it's the wave of the future. Everyone seems to know it. Everyone's moving towards cities. They're great. They have all kinds of, low carbon footprints and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
You can great. I get kick-ass fruit in my neighborhood. You could try to buy fruit in the middle of Kentucky. It's expensive. And it's not good.
Yeah.
And I'm buying, like, dollar fruit at the shitty local, like Jamaican food mart that's open 24 hours a day. If I need okra at 3 a.m., I can get it. And, but the thing is, it's like, it's great. And it's like a dollar for five plums.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing that out there.
No, it's so true. I mean, so it's city life.
Even though I love the car because I love to travel, I don't, I love not using the car.
That's true. I found, you know, I just recently switched jobs and I didn't drive a lot. I drove once a week, and I found the BBC series Top Gear, and I absolutely loved it. Mm-hmm. And it was just this is all about cars. It's a car show, you know?
Yeah.
And now that I have to drive for work again, I'm totally disinterested in the show. It was like the fantasy of, like, dude, open road, and cars, and supercars, mm-hmm. and crashes, and all of that. And then it became my life, and I was like, oh, that's on again? I don't care. But you're right. It's it loves the car, but hate the car.
Yeah.
And the car could kind of kill you, and the car could.
It's definitely could kill you.
Without
a doubt, it could kill you.
I went through a rough patch a couple weeks ago, and the way I cheered myself up was watching Russian dash cam car crash compilation videos on YouTube. It's a thing. Apparently, yes, apparently dash cams are huge in Russia.
Okay.
And then people drive crazy and it's always snowing and it's...
In Russia, dash cam drives you.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
And then there's people who just put all these people, put them on YouTube, and then people like just compress all these accidents. And there's one that like, they're up to the 30th compilation, like 7 minutes of cars smashing into each other. To the point where like, I watch it.
Whoa.
And then I go driving or I go for a ride. The first time I found it, I went for a ride with somebody and it was weird that the cars weren't smashing into one another. I was just like, wait, should that be hitting? Like, what I was expecting. And so I went to this kind of bad, weird thing. And so I was watching them, and I was watching a lot. And there was a couple where obviously the person, people involved did not survive the accident.
God.
Yeah, I mean, there was one, this truck, and it went sideways, and just a big semi-trailer just drove completely over it and flattened it. And you go, well, that person was definitely killed.
Jesus Christ, that's something you can watch on the YouTube. Well, that's they don't show the blood watching, or the whatever. But
yeah, they don't show the blood, but you know that there's no way anybody survived that wreck.
Maybe it was a remote control car, like on...
No, it was... they were killed, yeah. And it was weird, and it was because of conditions. There was a little bit of snow on the road, and the person just kind of hit the snowbank. And so, of course, I then went to Cleveland to go to a hockey game, and driving back, and it just started, there was just some flakes. And it was like, oh my God, I'm really gonna die.
Yeah.
I am really gonna die. And this is what is supposed to happen now. It's snowing. I'm going to die.
I drove from. I mean, everybody's has scary car stories, but when there's this one hill on the way to my mother's, and last Christmas I was driving to my mom's, and it was and Columbus was terrible. Columbus, Ohio, on the way. Mm. My mom lives out in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
So you go through Cincinnati and then you're pretty much at my mom's place. The Columbus was the worst, but my mom's neighborhood has this hill, two hills, and I called a friend and made her look up on the internet driving tips. I was basically like I haven't driven in so long. I've driven, but I hadn't spent that much time in the car.
Yeah.
And I it had been a full 10 years of living in the city, New York City. I shouldn't just say the city, like, but people do that apparently.
Yes, in New York.
I still haven't gotten used to that. It sounds douchey to me. But so in New York City.
But you just used it.
I did, but I caught myself. So I'm like only half a douche. I'm a dude. the guy, I call my friend and I'm just looking up tips for how to drive in the snow. And I'm lucky I have a stick and it was a lot of, idea was just downshift.
The downshift. And that's the thing, cause I was about to say, cause then you have to specify stick, automatic, ABS, no ABS, front wheel drive, rear wheel drive, four wheel drive. Those are all different.
Yeah.
Driving tips.
They are.
Yes.
I kind of feel, I think I'm a bit of a snob with the stick.
Stick people generally are.
I think it's the
phallic element.
A stick snob. I am.
You know, it's 2001 and you are the monkey that grabs the obelisk and just kind of.
Can I tell you the one thing that it really is good for, the stick? And it is, if you are stuck, in like, let's say,
you're in mud.
Some mud or some snow. And
no traction.
There's no traction. So, with an automatic, there's this kind of sense of you're always in gear.
Yeah.
And so rocking is difficult.
Mm.
So, but if you have a clutch, you can let release the clutch and you can push yourself forward in first gear, and then just put the clutch in and you roll back, and then you go into first gear and then you roll back. And so you build this slight momentum that way.
That is
the one thing that I really do believe that is the best thing for a car. Now someone's going to figure out that or so tell me that you can do that with an automatic, but I don't know
how. Well, you could already have a serious ABS traction control system.
Is that what ABS is?
Well, no, ABS is, I'm sorry, ABS is brakes. ABS, what that does, it pulses the brakes so that you don't have to pump if you're in a skid.
Oh.
It decides to let the brakes go on occasion.
No, that's smart.
So that you don't, because the thing is, if you totally lock a brake system up, you can turn the wheel all the way right, left, you're still going to go straight. But with ABS, you can panic and just slam on the brakes as hard as you can and still actually have some rudimentary kind of steering.
It's important to note that even though I'm talking about cars, that I know nothing about the workings of a car. I know how to drive one, and I know how to live in one.
Yes, which we'll get to that.
And I know a little bit, I've learned a little bit about my car, and thank God it's not completely computer driven. It's more like it's a little bit more like I could see
and
hoses.
And what is your car for the folks?
A Volkswagen Golf, a 1998 Volkswagen
1998,
Golf.
1998, a Clinton era Volkswagen Golf.
The only thing automatic on it, I mean, it's a stick. The windows actually wind down.
Up,
the, the only thing automatic is there's a sunroof or a moonroof, they call it. I don't know why, but that is automatic, and that is my constant fear is that thing will break in the open position.
Oh yeah, that's pretty.
I
believe, if I'm not mistaken, they're probably in your ceiling, in your headliner. Mm-hmm. There probably is some kind of random plastic cap.
Okay.
Or something like there's a random plastic bit, and if you pulled that off, there is a crank that you can override, and you throw like an Allen wrench in there, and you can.
Badass.
Yeah, because I know.
That's just good to note.
Yes, that's up there. And then the other thing is that you have to then, if it, like, the seal goes, you have to just use caulk. You just have to caulk the roof of your car to make it dry, which is a thing that can
Nothing
happen.
Wrong. Yeah. Dry. Yeah.
Dry caulk.
Dry caulk job. That's a good, that's something that happens.
So one of the things I definitely want to talk about, I remember reading about this even in, like, the driver's ed manual in high school. Mm-hmm. That kind of, they say, you know, long highway trips, especially on like the Eisenhower interstate system, that there's a kind of almost hypnosis that happens.
Oh, yeah.
And it kind of is like you feel yourself slipping into almost like a lower consciousness or like a diminished mental function, even as you're driving a 3-ton death machine. You find yourself just kind of chilling out. Mm-hmm. And for somebody who spends a lot of time on the road, I'm sure that's like a thing, man.
You know what? Actually, I noticed that driving here to visit you in Pittsburgh. I'm in my life in general, and especially behind the car, I really do kind of constantly remind myself that death is right around the corner. This is something that I do on a regular basis. Yeah. So I
can show you some great videos on YouTube, by the way.
Part of my driving experience is to remind myself that I'm in a moving death machine, like a lethal weapon. Like I'm driving this thing. Mm-hmm. And that as much as I might feel like I'm in control of my lethal weapon, I can't trust anyone else on the road.
This is true.
And that's why people that drive as if they own the road that's my fault with them. It's not that they're not good drivers, because a lot of those people really know how to weave in and out of traffic. They know how to avoid everything. It's the other person.
Yes.
And that's where I'm like, you idiot. You're not thinking of what the other person is about to do. Like me, when you come up on me, like, it's just like, that's the.
Yeah, so, that is really frustrating. Yeah. I always try to model myself. I don't know if you've ever driven to Canada or like the Queens Highway from Buffalo to Toronto, but they're very swift but courteous.
Yeah.
It's like, that's what I go for, is I try to drive as fast as humanly possible, or at least fast enough to not get caught. I admit that. I have a rather heavy right foot, I have a large, powerful Buick of a machine.
Yeah.
But you're right that, and I'm someone who, as an English professor, I frequently find myself lost in the thoughts of other human beings and lost in the consciousness of other human beings to the point where
while driving,
while doing lots of things, driving especially, I find myself, I know when I was doing my graduate school coursework, I always had something to say in class or always something to contribute, and people thought I was a good student because I went to school about 90 minutes away from where I live.
Uh-huh.
And so a few times a week, I'd make this drive. And so I'd have 90 minutes of that low mental function on a highway system. And I could just kind of get lost in someone else's thoughts. And then I'd go to class and yes, and it's like Baudrillard said or something. And then I'd drive home after class and I'd have all of this great reflection time.
Right.
That all of a sudden, oh, and somebody said that, and this, I have to read that article, and that book sounds so cool, and oh, yes, but they said this, but how does this concept work? And it made me a better student having to commute really far to the point where when I got approval for my dissertation topic and you're going to move forward with this, one of the first things that I did was I went out and bought a Buick.
Nice.
I needed something that was large, powerful, and sort of isolated me from the driving experience, which is what that car does.
Yeah.
The first few times I had it, it's got like 800 pounds of soundproofing in it. I looked into this. And so the first couple times I was driving it around town, I almost got T-boned by cop cars because I couldn't hear the sirens, or I had to really like more be like, oh, there's flashing lights and a horn over there.
Yeah.
And so it really isolates you, and it helps actually for me build that mental state. When I drive, we have three cars, when I drive the Cavalier or I drive the Fiat 500, I'm very much aware of there's a road underneath me.
Yeah.
In the Buick, no, there's nothing else out there ever.
That's the thing about this hypnosis thing. And I so even though I'm constantly reminding myself that I could die at any second if I'm an idiot on the road. Or even if I'm not. It's true.
Have you seen Final Destination 6?
Don't talk about that.
Sorry.
No, I haven't, and I can't wait to see it. No, that's not true. I didn't see 2 through 5, but I did see 1.
Okay.
And I enjoyed it. The hypnosis thing is, I find that the more I drive, the more it sneaks in.
Yes.
That the car now being a year and a half old is something that I find myself, I have been so consistently good through my quote unquote entire life by having like keeping my hands on 10 and 2.
10 and 2,
like,
yeah.
Like making sure to like.
Now, does the car have an airbag?
This car has an airbag, yeah.
3 and 9.
Oh, really?
10 and 2, if you hit something, you'll break your wrist.
Oh, wow.
3 and 9.
That's interesting.
Yeah, they don't teach 10 and 2 anymore.
Oh, wow. Because of the airbags.
Because of the airbag. And, like, or you could actually shatter both of these.
My sister broke her arm.
Bones in your lung. Yeah, that's
the airbag. 10 and 2.
Okay. 9 and 3.
All right.
9 and 3.
I think, and she's older than me, so she was probably driving that.
Yes.
Yeah, so I find myself doing things like, I still only do this when I'm alone on the road, meaning like I can be on a highway, but there's like no one around me. I will keep one arm hand bare. It's on 7. With just my thumb.
Oh, yeah.
I've got the thumb on 7.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I do that. The one thumb driving. I don't text while driving.
Yeah, no, I have, that's no, evil.
Well, it is, but I'll admit, I have texted while driving, but as a general, I do not text while driving.
Yeah,
me too. I totally, like,
play with your iPod.
Yeah, I, like, totally find, like, the podcast I'm going to listen to.
Yeah.
I absolutely read a text that might get popped up on my phone. I'll look for a playlist. Yeah. I will shuffle the cord to plug something into my lighter, the GPS thing runs the lighter, or the charged phone on the lighter.
Yeah. Now, I'm lost in the thoughts of other people.
It's bad.
And driving. I can't spin that third plate. Like, for instance, I once had, I had this moral philosophy class when I went to, went to St. Francis, and, you know, we read Peter Singer's Animal Liberation little clip, and, you know, his whole thing about, you gotta be a vegetarian because it's, if it can suffer, then that sucks, and you shouldn't make it suffer. And even if you could, you know, sneak up and kill a cow by surprise, and he does all that, creepy Peter Singer logic thing, and you're just like, you know, and at the time, I was like, no, I like burgers, and I totally rejected it. And I was driving away, you know, it was like my first year of grad school, and I thought about it, and I was like, fuck, he's right, and I almost wrecked. I almost, there was twice in my life where I've come to a revelation because of this, and I've almost wrecked.
Wow.
Yeah,
and so you really don't have room for the third plate.
No, I don't have room for the third plate. I got Peter Singer in there, and he's creepy and moralistic and logical. The other thing that happened to me once, and I'll never forget this, and I tried to kind of write about it, because I do the poetry thing a little bit, and it didn't come out right, but I was on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, which is, if it's possible for a man to be in love with a stretch of asphalt, I think it is the first, it's the first superhighway in America, and I think it's the best. It's just such a wonderful road that was designed so that you go 80 in the bends and 100 on the straights.
Right.
And those were in 1920s hoopty cars. There's tunnels, there's mountains. You come out of the mountains, and then there's this great straight rolling hill section.
Yeah.
And especially to go, not that I like ending up in Philadelphia, but coming, going from Pittsburgh to Philadelphia is a true pleasure.
And a lot of people really don't like that drive.
I love that
because
drive.
Because they get bored.
I love it.
Talking about, like, well, Pennsylvania lasts forever.
Those people are not going fast enough. And I can tell you that, oh, I hope my insurance company isn't listening, or the Pennsylvania State Police, but I was going 85 miles an hour in the very windy mountain part. And that's the other thing about the Buick is, you know, 60, 50, 60 in the Fiat, you feel like you're moving.
Yeah.
And in our 97 Cavalier, 50, 60 is like you're waiting for glass to pop out or something. I love that car, but the pieces are getting all loose at the same time. But 85 in the Buick is when you finally feel like, okay, I'm going fast. And I was listening to Mogwai, the song I'm Jim Morrison, I'm Dead, which is this wonderful, expansive, propulsive kind of rhythmic song. And I'm there in the corners, and everybody else is speeding with me, and the police don't care.
Right.
And it was just, it was a quasi-religious experience. I really, I reached an emotional state that I've only reached a few other times in my life. And it's hard to describe or put in words. And I think it's almost like that taking that hypnosis to some other level. And it was just wonderful. And I've never repeated it. I've driven fast since. I've driven on that stretch since. I've listened to that song while driving many times as an attempt to rekindle the magic. But it just was such a wonderful, beautiful sort of moment to have, you know.
You're right. I've had some wonderful moments in cars, and I would say it's interesting that we were just talking about the hypnosis aspect, because in a way, the car. There's something I think about the car, and I'm about to tell you what it is, but it's also been ruined by my current ability to listen to podcasts, to listen to, to really keep my ears engaged. Because my magical moments in cars were, years ago when I was stuck with the Radiohead.
I was truly stuck
with the radio, and I knew that, I was gonna really hate the radio about 3 hours in. So on a 10-hour car trip, I would get in the car, and I would purposefully not listen to the radio for as long as I possibly could. So, and I could go like 3 or 4 hours, because 3 hours seems about right. It's like a long movie. It's like you can deal with anything for about 3 hours.
Yes.
And, you know, and there's visual things to look at. There's my own thoughts to go for. And then about 3 hours in, I'd be like, now I have to listen to the radio. But then I would, and then 3 hours of that, and then I would turn it off. That second silent 3 hours, hours, you know, 7, 8, and 9, were the ones that were really great.
Really?
Because they would be my, I would have gotten rid of all the, I would have gotten through all my original thoughts of the first silent 3 hours. I would have gotten through the need to be entertained for 3 hours and I turned it off. And then it was like, now it's time to get real. And in a way, it reminded me of the things I've heard about sensory deprivation, where you just let yourself get weird.
Yeah.
I have to share this with you. I made a recording on the way out here because I knew we were going to talk about, cars.
Okay.
And, so what happened was, and this is even now when I have the world at my fingertips with this phone. That's about to cause me to get a wreck anyway.
Yes.
When you plug the phone in, my radio gets tons of static. That's just what happens. Not when I'm listening to this phone through the stereo, but when I plug the charger into the lighter, creates the
electrical,
this,
yes.
Yeah,
there's
it's this electrical
car
static.
Electrical is also very weird.
Yeah, and you don't get any radio, you don't get anything. So I'm flipping through the stations in AM. It was that hard.
AM electrical, yeah.
Yeah. I had forgotten it was that bad. So I flip on there and there was some electrical pulse that was making a beat. I found this.
That happens, yeah. Yep.
And it was this sort of like clicking sort of electrical pulse.
Actually, you know what you might have been picking up? You might have been picking up your spark plugs.
It sounded exactly like that kind of thing. I've never
done that. Yes, I believe that is possible.
It felt like
to pick up your spark plugs.
So I started, I just like relaxed and got into the beat, the electrical beat. I didn't really catch that on tape, but I started, experimenting because just a music nerd. So I was like, I did this earlier in my gig today, and it was, where you go. It's kind of like a weird trumpety trombone sound where you go, I don't know if I can do it off the cuff. You like to make that sort of sound?
Yes.
So, and I started doing that, and so I just was like, I'm an idiot. I'm going to, you can barely hear it.
That's amazing,
yeah.
Alex.
So I mean, you can barely hear it, but I was like, this is the state I get into when I'm in a car and there's nothing.
Yeah.
Which is which I caused myself by plugging the phone in and had forgotten about. But it used to happen to me constantly when I was driving, stuck with only the radio or nothing.
Well, and I think that's the other thing I really want to get to is there's this weird dichotomy, there's this weird duality, if you will, with that you have almost this heightened sensory experience. I mean, it's sometimes driving is just the best TV.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you have the screen, you have this landscape, especially I love driving in Western Pennsylvania because I grew up in New Jersey and there's never a horizon.
Yeah.
To the point where when the first time I went to the flat part of America, the first time I went to Indiana, and my uncle had a house outside of South Bend, and there were four horizons. Everywhere you look, you could see as far as you could see.
That is.
And that really freaked me out. And the first time I went, I really did not like being outside of the house.
Doesn't it feel like a slasher?
The slasher
guy
thing, and there was corn, and then there would be breezes, pocket breezes, so you could see the corn move in one little section.
Yeah.
And it was just freaky. And it was growing up without a horizon ever. There was always a backyard fence or a building when I grew up.
Yeah.
Here in Western Pennsylvania, it's interesting because you get like one horizon because you're on the side of a hill.
Yeah, yeah.
And you look this way, there's some trees. And then the other side, oh, there's a valley with a river in it, you know.
Right.
And I used to really trip on that. And I still kind of do. I forget like when friends from out of town visit and you go up sideways through a tunnel and then you come out and there's water and you're underground or something. And people go, whoa. And I forget that magic. So you have that like heightened kind of, you're compressing an entire landscape that you think would take Lewis and Clark days and weeks to get through, and they just,
yeah.
Yes, there's a hill over there, I'm going to keep walking or I'll starve to death,
right.
Kind of thing. But here it's like 60 miles an hour. It's like, oh, there's a hill, I've never gone faster. You know, I mean, the nature writer, Edward Abbey, he hated that the parks had roads in them. It's like, no, you should go out there and struggle on foot and die in this desert.
Right.
Then you'll see something. But by car, you can see Yellowstone in like 6 hours and you're out, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you don't really have nature. So it's really not nature, but it's beautiful landscape. And so you have this heightened sensory kind of experience, but it's also very selective and very edited. And I could say that because mm-hmm. I've been making the drive off and on to Indiana, Pennsylvania for the better part of 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I made what might be one of my last drives from there, just, you know, 48 hours ago. And I noticed buildings that I never saw before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of like, was that building always? I had that this morning. Actually, we were driving down to the strip to see your show. Yeah. And I looked up at Bluff and at Duquesne campus. And I was like, was that white section always a part of that building?
Right.
Was that always there?
It is weird.
I've been driving, and it's a road I've been driving on itself for 12 years. Is that really there?
I totally get that, too. I wonder if... I'm curious how much that happens in a non-car situation, but I definitely think it's definitely really noticeable in a car situation. Because things go... You have other things to worry about, like not dying.
What's between those lines?
And
what's
then,
the guy on the bike going to do?
Yeah, and the thing you're looking at is, unless it's a dirt road or a gravel road, it's asphalt.
It's like, asphalt, and it has lines on it.
You know, and that's... So looking up and away from that is something you probably shouldn't do, but yes. We're all going to do.
Yes.
And so you catch glimpses of it as it goes by. If you're lucky and there's not a lot of traffic, you can look around. But I've done some drives over and over and over again, and I definitely see different things every time.
And it's
great. Yes,
and it's not like that tree moved.
Right.
You know, it's the building hasn't moved, the tree hasn't moved, the mountainside hasn't moved.
You're right. It's like the best TV, because it's like watching the same show. In that situation, they're watching the same show over again and seeing something different every single time.
Yes, with the DVD commentary. Man, they should have, you know, commentary tracks for drives. I mean, well, you know,
it's
I guess
a good idea.
Well, I guess they have that at Gettysburg.
You
can buy a
like
CD
a
or rent a CD.
Yeah.
And then do the driving tour of the battlefield.
You should do
a
history drive, like a drive across 70, like the turnpike.
The Pennsylvania Turnpike, 76.
76. So you drive across the turnpike, because a lot of people do it,
yeah.
And then start, like, leave from Philadelphia, go to Pittsburgh, do the history the whole way. You can talk about the history of Pennsylvania, and you can be like, and about now you should see on your right.
If you're going 65 miles an hour,
you know,
and that would be, you'd have to have a set speed, you know.
I mean, that would be great. I love that. I would listen to that.
Tailored to your, yes, that could be perhaps the next podcast.
Project.
Yes. But yeah, that is your brain on cars. Are you ready for the bottom five?
I'm ready for the bottom five.
The bottom five are five questions that have nothing to do with our primary topic.
Okay.
They are surrealistic and philosophical in nature.
Okay.
And sort of, it's like,
I love cereal.
It's it's yummy. I love me some Chex. Maybe I had cornflakes this morning. Think of it as the Book of Surrealist Games meets Inside the Actor's Studio.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Question one. If reincarnation was real and you had to come back as an infectious disease,
oh my gosh,
what disease would you want to be?
Ooh. Is it a disease? It's I want to be.
Or illness. It could be an illness.
Can I be like a hookworm?
Okay, well, it's parasite, but that'll,
okay,
that'll,
I mean,
fuck you up. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
you might need penicillin for that if you have hookworms. So
something like that. I kind of want to be something that's slightly beneficial, but is a symbiotic relationship.
Oh, like maybe that bacteria that lives in people's intestines.
Yes,
and if
exactly.
It wasn't in there, you couldn't digest food.
Right, but
oh, that's a
but
brilliant...
with too much of me, I'd be really trouble. Like, so,
yes.
You know, like, it'd be...
Well, you know,
and I guess I'd probably just be one of them.
One of them? Well, you would multiply. You would cell divide. And asexual reproduction.
Do you think they know that they're more than one thing?
Well, I mean, but they practice asexual reproduction, but I think those kinds of organisms...
I've been doing that all month.
Split, yeah. Years of practice on that one for me. So they must know, oh, time to split and get kind of big. You know, so that must happen with them. In fact, I think there's actually a procedure. It's very rare, but if your guts lose that bacteria,
mm-hmm.
one of the ways to get that back
is to talk to Jamie Curtis and get the right kind of yogurt.
You can get the right kind of yogurt, or actually, you have they use the fecal matter from another person
and put it in you.
Not you don't eat it.
Yeah, yeah.
They put it in the other
surgically
way,
or something.
And it like as it works its way out, the bacteria go, hey, this is. It's warm and moist in here, damn. And they do that, so.
That makes total sense.
I
don't want to get into that position where it's like, hold on, bend over and I'll shove some shit up your ass. But
don't eat your own hand sanitizer then, I would think. And, you know, because your body needs bacteria, and they say that's one of the things. People use hand sanitizer
that's what I
so
had
much.
For breakfast.
Yeah. All right, next question. How would the world be different if the president was some sort of artist rather than the typical Harvard graduate lawyer types that we've had since Harry Truman was the last one who wasn't, I believe. Maybe Eisenhower.
If they were an artist like the artists I know,
yeah,
they would have great, great social policies. What I mean by social is just like, I feel like there would be a sense of warmth.
Empathy.
Sense of community.
Empathy. So
that would be really wonderful. I also think that if they were an artist like myself, and I feel like most of the artists I know, that there would be a lot of it would be chaos.
Yeah, they would just like forget about the FDA or the FAA. Like one day all the planes would crash and you'd be like, oh shit, I forgot to mail that
yeah,
in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or it'd be this kind of yeah, that sums it up. It's that because you'd forget. I'm easily swayed. That's one of my.
Artists
are easily swayed, but I, as an artist, am easily swayed. So if someone has a really eloquent way of putting things and is convinced themselves, then I'm like, yeah, I should give money to stop cat juggling.
True. I have a very good friend who's a very good actress, but she's very bad at life.
And
sometimes it is that. This is a great idea.
Yeah, and I would be so easily swayed. Right. I would be simultaneously a Republican, a Democratic, and a Libertarian. Except,
so you
socially everything would because people would all of those people that.
So you would end up being a kinder, gentler Mitt Romney then.
I don't know, like a flip-flopper? Like all over the place?
Yeah.
I mean, is that what you mean? Like kind of doing whatever comes.
Like Mitt Romney, but human.
Right. In a way, yeah. I thought he was a schmuck, but
absolutely.
But he's a
horrifying human being.
But
there was no human touch.
But in ipso facto or whatever. No, wait, that's not the right word. The way it came out in the wash would be the same. It would be that I would be. I would be easily leaning towards any time at anything, but I'll tell you one thing is that everyone would be treated with respect. Every single person. I think that's the number one thing about having an artist that you could get, the positive thing. Cause I don't know any artists that, like, real artists that dig deep and are kind of like, What am I about and what are you about?
Okay, yeah.
Most artists are like, yeah, even if I don't agree with you, I'm gonna help you.
Yeah.
I'm gonna allow this.
You know, and there's that distinction that I guess maybe needs to be made between true artists, who you say is that person who's kind of plunged the depths and understands and is self-aware and self-contained and sort of just has a sense of who they are and what they're doing and their abilities and other people. And the sort of pretentious, insecure art fucks.
Yeah.
Like a pretentious, insecure art fuck president would be somebody would end up hitting the button and we'd all be killed, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there would be death camps.
And I don't want to say that you're right. I actually think of art and artists as different people. Different things. Like, I don't think they're necessarily, they're intertwined, of course, but art doesn't represent an artist to me. Like, I'm willing to say that something I don't like and don't think is has an artist behind it is art. I'm willing to say it's art.
Okay.
Like
found object.
You know, like a found object can be considered art.
Yes.
But like that doesn't make an artist.
Yeah.
And I feel like an artist is someone who's really into creating, and therefore you, if you have to create, you have to break down a whole bunch of walls in order to just let it out.
Mm.
And the breaking down the walls is the thing that allows you to accept other people for whatever they happen to be.
Great point. So, if you had to choose, if you're forced to choose, this is number three.
Okay.
If you had to choose, this actually is from the book of Surrealist Games. If you had to choose between getting rid of day or night, which one would you choose? If for some reason, some cosmic, the earth stopped spinning, that we could kind of plan when it stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Eternal day, eternal night.
And the assumption is that nothing's going to be completely fucked by having all day or all night.
It probably would, but in your own personal little spiffwig and bubble.
Okay. Like if I had to live in even pretend day all the time. Or pretend night all the time.
Yeah. Well, not pretend night. It would just be night all the time or that day. Which one, if you had to get rid of one. And just maybe not, don't worry about growing food.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
You know, don't worry about whether or not the atmosphere would collapse.
Right.
Or things would fall off the earth or whatever. But if you just had to, okay, it's day forever, it's night forever. Which one would you go for?
You know what? This is a hard question. And I flip in that whole discussion we just had about the depth of the question, I flip-flopped my answer. But I flip-flopped it three times.
Okay.
Or two. I flip-flopped it two, so I came back to my original answer.
Okay, which was?
My gut instinct was day, because I just want to see some stuff.
Okay.
I want to really just be able to see everything. And then I was like, no, but night has such a beautiful, like, subtlety to it, and kind of a mystery to it that's really wonderful. And then I was like, but your instinct was day. And I realized that for me, if I could, that day has so many shades.
Oh, okay.
So if you walk through a heavily canopied forest, even though it's day, it's a different kind of light.
Mm.
In the dark, I feel like I'm kind of fucked.
It's dark, and you're either in the country or urban, sickly orange puke glow.
Yeah, for me, it's like daytime all the way. It's like, because I can falsify the darkness, but then in the nighttime, if you falsify the light, it's kind of rough.
Yeah, it's like fluorescent.
Fluorescent, yeah.
Yeah, fluorescent is awful.
So daytime all the way. All
right, question.
I want to see deers.
Yeah. Want to see deer before you hit them with your car, I guess. Oh, we're not talking about cars anymore.
All right.
Okay. Question four. What do you think the biggest limit people put on their own experience? Or their sort of self-imposed limits to their own experience? That you find other people say, oh, I'm not going to go there. What do you think the biggest thing people do to almost maybe shelter themselves, keep themselves away from things or things that they're afraid of?
Self itself. Like that the idea that you are who you are, or that you have a certain set of life rules that you were born with, or that you end up in, or whatever. Like I'm a musician who lives in New York and who's from Kentucky. Why, if I think of that as like that is myself, it's a very shallow definition because it doesn't even start to explain who I am, but it is a primary definition, something I would tell anyone that wants to get to know me.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if I define myself that way, that sense of self can easily hold me back from making a difference in Mexico, for instance.
Okay.
It can easily hold me back from making a difference in the business world because I'm not in the business world. So this sense of place or self, a definition of yourself, even though it's wonderful to find that, to explore that, to figure out who you are, it's also something that will hold you back immensely. I mean, it's that sort of who am I to change the world? I think that's ultimately a huge problem. If you don't think of yourself, I don't know if anybody is given the power from their community parents to change the world. I don't know if anyone is like handed that. Hey, guess what? You get a chance. You get to do this. It seems like a really rare thing, if anyone.
Yeah, monarchies maybe, but there's not many of them left, or maybe. You
right. Know, I mean, maybe politicians feel that. Maybe. Politician families. But like sort the Kennedys.
I guess that North Korean kid, maybe, I guess.
The North Korean? Oh, the Kim Il Jong guy.
Yeah, the little one, yeah.
Yeah.
Little
Kim.
Little Kim.
That would be the thing. Self. All right. You can't avoid.
Question five. Last question of the final five. What is the strangest injury you've ever suffered?
Huh. Can it be emotional?
Maybe.
I know you were thinking physical.
Well, you are an artist.
I am thinking physical. What is the strangest physical injury I've ever... Oh, I think this is strange. Okay. And honestly, one of the most painful things. So, as you may know, I was born with two thumbs on my right hand.
Oh, that's right. Yes, that is on. Yeah, that's on on your website. Which is, by the way, we should squeeze a cynical plum a plug in before
squeeze a cynical plum.
Oh no.
Okay, I'll plug myself. Spiff Wiegand, i.e. Wiegand. .com.
G-A-N-D.
Spiff, S-P-I-F-F, like spiffy without the Y. Mm-hmm. Wiegand, meaning warrior.
Really?
Apparently. I think it's Germanic-esque. So anyway, spiffwiegand.com. Check
Touring
it out.
Touring 2013. Across the country.
Across the country.
In a 1998 Volkswagen Golf.
Exactly.
Green.
Exactly. Yeah, it's green. So I'm born with two thumbs in my right hand, and they cut off the vestigial, is that the word? Thumb. The thumb that shouldn't have been there. The one that was clearly extra.
The scientific word extra one.
Didn't move on its own. Just kind of hanging on. Looked. It had a nail, but it was really just kind of... It really was... It's like Snowpaw on a cat. They don't... It's just a fat thumb.
Your dew claw.
My dew claw, yeah. Totally. Is that Jude Law's brother? Duke? Duke Law?
I don't know
what
that is.
All right. All right, whatever. But the spot where they took the thumb off as a scar, if that gets hit, for instance, when you're sword fighting with your brother when you're a little kid, and it's not a real sword, but it's like some plastic tube that kind of looks like a lightsaber if you shine a light into it.
Okay, okay. or fluorescent light tube.
Something like
those
that.
great Star Wars things. Yeah.
So if you're pretend sword fighting and that sword of your brother's comes down and hits your scar where there doesn't seem to be any protection against the bone and you clearly cut a bone off, I'm just saying that is some fucking pain right there.
Oh,
that
Lord
hurts this. Like God, and it's a strange injury.
That is very strange. That's an injury most people are ineligible.
Yeah, I would say I haven't had any sort of normal injuries that were strange enough or that were caused by strange things. But that injury just hurts, and it still hurts whenever something like that happens. Whenever I'm sword fighting,
I see. Yes,
pretend sword fighting.
Pretend sword fighting.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's about it.
Wonderful. It's been
great,
Matt.
Thank you very
Francis,
much.
Did you see it?
Yes, yeah. That's who I am. don't spread the word on that.
All right.
No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I think that's about it. Our next episode will eventually happen, and it will be about something. Thank you for listening to our pilot. And again, thanks, Spiff Wiegand, for being here. That's spiffwiegand.com, W-I-E-G-A-N-D, Spiff, S-P-I. Anyway, I don't know. I guess we'll probably get, like, a Twitter account or something if this is going to be, like, a
real follow you on Facebook and Twitter. That's what you should say for now.
Yes. when those things happen, this has been We're All Gonna Die. And other fun facts, and I'm gonna shut up now.
Good night.
Yes.